Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, the September meeting of the Talk of Iowa Book Club. This hour, we'll be talking about The Mothers by Britt Bennett. It's a New York Times bestselling novel published in 2016. It's also the 2020 All-Iowa Reads selection for adult readers. The committee selected the book because, even though it has nothing to do with Iowa, they felt that it's a universal story of human nature. The book tells the story of Nadia Turner. And at the beginning of the book, she's a 17-year-old honors student with big dreams and a bright future. But she is also struggling with the loss of her mother to suicide. The book is narrated by a group of elderly women who are affiliated with the church Nadia's family attends, the Church Mothers. And here's how it begins. We didn't believe when we first heard, because you know how church folk can gossip. Like the time we all thought First John, our head usher, was messing around on his wife because Betty, the pastor's secretary, caught him cozying up at brunch with another woman. A young, fashionable woman at that, one who switched her hips when she walked, even though she had no business switching anything in front of a man married 40 years. You could forgive a man for stepping out on his wife once, but to romance that young woman over buttered croissants at a sidewalk cafe? Now that was a whole other thing. But before we could correct First John, he showed up at Upper Room Chapel that Sunday with his wife and the young, hip-switching woman, a great niece visiting from Fort Worth, and that was that. When we first heard, we thought it might be that type of secret, although we have to admit it had felt different, tasted different too. All good secrets have a taste before you tell them, and if we'd taken a moment to swish this one around in our mouths, we might have noticed the sourness of an unripe secret, plucked too soon, stolen and passed around before its season. But we didn't. We shared this sour secret, a secret that began the spring Nadia Turner got knocked up by the pastor's son and went to the abortion clinic downtown to take care of it. She was 17 then. She lived with her father, a Marine, and without her mother, who had killed herself 6 months earlier. Since then, the girl had earned a wild reputation. She was young and scared and trying to hide her scared in her prettiness. And she was pretty. Beautiful even, with amber skin, silky long hair, and eyes swirled brown and gray and gold. Like most girls, she'd already learned that pretty exposes you and pretty hides you, and like most girls, she hadn't yet learned how to navigate the difference. So we heard all about her sojourns across the border to dance clubs in Tijuana, the water bottle she carried around Oceanside High filled with vodka, the Saturdays she spent on base playing pool with Marines, nights that ended with her heels pressed against some man's foggy window. Just tales, maybe, except for one we know now is true. She spent her senior year of high school rolling around in bed with Luke Shepherd, and come springtime, his baby was growing inside her. That's just a taste of The Mothers by Britt Bennett, our September book club pick. We did invite Bennett to be a part of the show, but she's very busy promoting her second novel, and she wasn't able to be here. We will hear her voice a couple of times during the hour with audio pulled from an online chat she did for All Iowa Reads. And we have some expert readers joining the conversation this hour. Our first expert reader is here now. Shanna Benjamin is an independent scholar in literary studies with a specialization in Black women writers. She's the author of the forthcoming book, Half in Shadow, The Life and Legacy of Nellie Y. MacKay. And many Iowans know her because she taught at Grinnell College for a number of years. And she is on the line with me now. Hello, Shanna.
Hi, Charity. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And first, give me your impressions of the book as a reader, not starting as a scholar.
Sure. Well, you know, it's one of those books, when you have a book like this and it begins with we, and there's this collective voice, and it brings you into all of the secrets from the first, two or three pages. I mean, everything that happens in the novel is condensed. And so what you get to experience is the joy of seeing how it all unravels and how incidents relate to one another. So I was just captivated from the opening pages. and was really taken not only by Bennett's use of language, but also by the sort of careful way that she depicts a Black community outside of the white gaze.
Explain that a little bit more for me.
Sure, sure. So I think that there are moments where Black people depict their circumstances in relation to white supremacy. That would be a battle against those forces that not only demoralize us as humans, but also crush our bodies, are involved in all kinds of exploits related to anti-Blackness. But here we get the voice of a community. We get the voice of Black people relating to one another on a very human level. And so in that way, I thoroughly enjoyed the novel for the way that it took me deep within the soul of these characters and also gave me a sense of the community around Black faith, around Black faith groups that I think is beginning to be seen a little bit more. I'm thinking about Deesha Filyaw's The Secret Life of Church Ladies, which just came out, and it says a lot about how Black church communities are a site, but also a symbol of a lot of the ways that Black communities find freedom, but also battle with particular forms of oppression. So I thought that the novel was just multi-layered, that it had so much to do with how Black communities find the freedom to represent themselves, but it also was a wonderful connection to, I thought about broader traditions in Black women's writing, particularly Toni Morrison's Sula, where you have kind of a similar circumstance, and there are going to be some spoilers. Well, I'm going to try to avoid as many spoilers as possible. But you have the titular character, Sula, who certainly defies convention, but a lot of folks come down on her for sleeping with her best friend's husband. And so what I appreciate when I think about these two texts put side by side is the choices that are available to Black women when they exist outside of society's approval, the risks of individualism, and what happens to the pariah. In Morrison's Sula, the community, within the context of that community, the pariah is always a part. But there's something about this community of women in the upper room that make it hard for Nadia to ever feel like she's a part.
We will try to avoid some major spoilers in this book as well, although even if that was a spoiler for somebody, you should read Sula, even if you haven't anyway.
Yeah.
Don't worry, it's not going to spoil the book for you
at right, all. Right, right.
You know, before I read this book, I kind of avoided reading reviews of it and reading background mm-hmm. on it. I wanted to come at it fresh. And after the fact, when I listened in on that panel that Britt Bennett did with All Iowa Reads online and discovered that she started writing this book when she was 16 years old, I was blown away because the characters are so deep and so nuanced. And of course, she spent 8 years writing the book, but what an incredible young voice she has.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that freshness certainly comes through when you hear Nadia, when you get a sense of her interiority. And I'll say a few words about that because on the other side of thinking about, well, in addition to thinking about the way that Bennett represents this youthful voice of Nadia, I think that for Black women and girls, how we portray their interiors is lost on a lot of folks in kind of a popular public sphere. And so what I mean by that is you have these very public portrayals of Black women and girls. They're angry, loose, or ignorant in some way. But what we know through the careful depiction of Black women's interiors is that we're vulnerable and joyous and insightful. And so I love the way that Bennett was able to characterize all of those different emotions and really capture the humanity in Nadia that was growing, that was in progress, that had to wrestle with mistakes, regret, the consequences of choices. All of these human feelings you have being experienced by a young woman. And I think that it puts us in a different space when we can then begin to sympathize with those who don't have the agency to live anywhere beside their parents' homes, are sort of defined by these communities before they can get up and go to college and have lives that they define more on their own terms. So I appreciated the way that Bennett was able to give us this insight into a growing body of work on Black, not just Black women, but also Black girls.
The fact that the book is called The Mothers works on so many levels, and we're going to explore motherhood throughout this hour. We're also going to talk about the role of abortion in the book in just a few minutes, because that is a pivotal plot point in this book. And but let's just, with about a minute left before we go to break, let's talk about motherhood and the many levels. I mentioned already that it's narrated by these church mothers. It's called The Mothers. It's referring to them. Nadia has lost her mother, so she is a girl without a mother. She is facing motherhood. I mean, there are so many different kinds of mothers and motherhood in this book. I think, Shannon, we might not even be able to pick them all out.
Yes, you're absolutely right. What I would say, and I'll be as succinct as possible, I would reverse the way that we name these mothers of the church. Instead of church mothers, mothers of the church, because mothers of the church have a very particular role within Black faith communities. And what's important to me about the portrayal of mothers in this novel is that you have mothers, not mammies. And so you have Black women taking care of Black children. Instead of Black women being there to be caregivers for white children. And
all
that's
right,
a very, very important distinction.
Yeah. Let's pick that up in just a moment. With me this hour, I have Shanna Benjamin. We're talking about our September book club pick. It's called The Mothers by Britt Bennett. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is the September meeting of the Talk of Iowa Book Club, and this hour we're talking about The Mothers by Britt Bennett. The book tells the story of Nadia Turner. At the beginning of the book, she's 17 years old. She's an honors student with big dreams and a bright future. She's also struggling with the loss of her mother to suicide. And the book is narrated by a group of older women, mothers of the church that Nadia's family attends. And this hour, we're exploring some of the many themes in this book. I also want to mention that this is the 2020 All Iowa Reads selection for adult readers. With me is Shanna Benjamin. She is an independent scholar in literary studies with a specialization in Black women writers. She's also the author of the forthcoming book, Half in Shadow, The Life and Legacy of Nellie Y. MacKay. And before I introduce our next two guests, Shanna, I want to give you a chance to just expand on the thought that you had right before the break, just a little bit, that in this book, we are seeing Black American mothers, not mammies, women raising and investing their lives in Black children, not in white children. Why is that so significant to you?
I think that that is significant because we certainly have a lack of positive portrayals of Black motherhood. I think reaching back to the Moynihan Report, where you have portrayals of Black families as pathological because of a certain perceived matriarchal structure that somehow Black women have emasculated their men, and because of that, the Black family structure is problematic. I think that here, there's not that same focus on motherhood or these partnerships as being problematic in and of themselves. You have human beings who are flawed, but they're not inherently flawed because of their race or the combination of race and gender. So I wanted to just thank you for giving me the chance to highlight that, because giving Black women the opportunity to claim motherhood is a revolutionary act. And so I just so appreciated the way Bennett was able to do that in this novel.
Absolutely. And let's bring our other readers into the conversation. Again, a reminder, this is Shanna Benjamin, an independent scholar in literary studies. And joining us now, Rosalyn Thompson, director of the Knoxville Public Library. She recently led a book club about the mothers. Hello, Rosalyn.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Well, thank
nice
you.
To join the discussion.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here today. Also with us today, Emily Spencer. She is a poet studying at the Iowa Writers' Workshop and working on a collection of poetry. Hello, Emily.
Hello.
Welcome back
nice
to the
to join
show.
You.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you both here. And since we've already started exploring this topic of motherhood in the book that really spans so many different levels and so many really nuanced characterizations of different mothers or lack of mothers or longing for motherhood. Rosalyn, I'm sure that was a topic that came up a great deal in the book club that you did. Give me some of the thoughts that you had and maybe even some of the people in your book club had about the portrayal of mothers in this book.
Right. We all, we try to read the All Iowa Reads selection every year. And so we all really enjoyed it. You know, you were asking, Shanna, about, you know, reading it and first impressions. And I read it really quickly, just read it in one night. And it was really engaging. And just the thought that, yeah, it's about motherhood. It's about mothers' expectations of what mothers expect of us, or what we expect of mothers. In general, the discussion that we had was really, really good about all the themes. There's so many themes in the book. You know, expectations. You know, when Nadia finds out that she's expecting and what she does about it and the consequences and how it resonates throughout the whole book then.
Yeah. Emily, do you want to weigh in here on some of the things that really maybe resonated with you with regard to how some of the mothers in the book were portrayed?
Yeah, so I like the unique take on mothers, particularly mothering as a verb in society that extends beyond someone who gave birth to someone. So in the sense of the sister, Monique, of Aubrey, who is the supporting character and the best friend of Nadia.
Right. And Aubrey is the same age. I'll just give a little bit of background. Aubrey is the same age as Nadia, and they really bond the summer after Nadia's mother has died. They spend that summer together, and Aubrey is another young woman without a mother because she has moved in to live with her sister and her sister's girlfriend because her mother's partner was sexually abusing her. So she was fleeing this situation. She was feeling unprotected by her mother and found a second mother in her sister. Emily, you can continue. I just wanted to make sure that we were all brought up to speed.
Yes, exactly. So about the sister, Monique, Aubrey's sister, there is I just wanted to read a quote here from Bennett's book, The Mothers, where it's referring to Monique and it says, "She was not a mother, but she had a mother's gift of rushing to the worst possible outcome. She was a trauma nurse at Scripps Mercy Hospital, so she encountered the worst possible outcome daily. But even if she hadn't been a nurse, she was the type to worry." And then so explaining, you know, that care and the rushing to help and the situation in both of these young women's lives where one could say a worst possible outcome had occurred.
Speaking of worst possible outcomes, and this is not speaking of Aubrey, but it's not much of a spoiler because it happens early in the book that Nadia does become pregnant, and the father of the baby is a son of this church, the son of the pastor at the church and the first lady of the church, who's a very powerful force in this church community and a very powerful force in her family as well. And she has this bright future ahead of her, and she knows that if she has a baby, that's going to change everything. So she makes the decision to get an abortion. And I want to play a little bit of what Britt Bennett said about abortion at the panel that she held online with All Iowa Reads. One of the things she said was that she wanted to tell a story where abortion was not an ending, but a beginning. And that is really unusual as a plot point. But she also doesn't see this book as a pro-choice book or a pro-life book. She didn't approach this in what she calls a political way. Here's a little bit of what she had to say.
It may sound strange, but as I was writing it, I did not think about the politics. I didn't think about the fact that it might be controversial. I think that if you think about those types of things, you'll be really frozen by fear and you can't actually create anything. So I just approached it from a very human place about this person who's makes this really difficult choice, and a choice that's, you know, ultimately the right choice for her.
All right, again, that's a little bit of Britt Bennett talking about the role of abortion in this novel, The Mothers. And Shanna, I would love to get your response. Before this show, you and I talked a little bit about how after reading the book, we both went and dug into those reviews and were kind of surprised by how big a role abortion played in those reviews. So what was your response to that?
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that comes to mind after listening just to the conversation thus far has to do with the fact that, you know, there are plenty of young, bright, and beautiful women who have children who are unwed. And, I mean, it all works out. And so I don't, what I want to work against is the sense that Nadia's choice was the only choice. I mean, this was her choice as she saw it.
Right.
But I think that her decision to make that choice had so much to do with her sense of herself in relation to community, because I think young mothers absolutely rely on the communities around them to help with the child rearing, child care. There are just these crucial communities of support. And so I don't think Nadia saw that. There weren't any models for her for how to do it. I also think that there is so much shame, and that shame that was executed by the church mothers, by the in the way that they maintain control. And so, you know, when I thought about the way that the abortion played in the novel, I thought about the way that it worked on us as readers as a kind of trigger that could prompt us to be self-reflective about the way that we judge, and then in turn to consider how our rush to judgment might provide insight into how the mothers of the church would have judged Nadia as well.
Well, and when you and I were talking before, we also talked about how if someone was so reactive to the idea of abortion, that would obscure their view of everything else that was going on in the book. I mean, I don't think that, I honestly don't think that the book challenges or would challenge your personal beliefs about abortion, but I felt like it was a very realistic portrayal of this difficult choice that this young woman had to make and how she lived with it from that point on, and not just her, but everyone else in her life. Shanna?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that, you know, you have this choice, but the choice becomes a secret. And once it becomes shrouded, then it begins to fester. And you have the inability of individuals within the context of community to wrestle with what it means, not just for Nadia to have the abortion, but the fact that all of this occurs in the wake of her mother's suicide. So there's a lot of behavior that that we see Nadia undertaking that seems that is a direct cause of the pain and the grief that she's experiencing since her mother took her life, and her inability to cope seems directly tied to her inability to express the depths of these feelings, often contradictory, about what it meant for her to survive, what it meant for her to be able to pursue her dreams when she knew that her mother, for reasons that she relates to having her, could not.
Emily, share your thoughts on this. Again, it's pretty unusual for an abortion to be such a pivotal plot point, but not to be explored in a political way. What were your feelings as a reader?
Yes, as a reader, I was surprised, but not surprised in that, you know, in the present day, it's definitely a topic that comes up frequently politically around elections and definitely in religious society. And so therefore seeing it, however, in a contemporary book of fiction for adults and with a young, relatively young narrator and protagonist. So I was surprised to see that it was like this, it was the central conflict. And I found a quote because it seemed Bennett used the term that this issue was sort of haunting the character Nadia, and that she didn't really seem to reach any sort of catharsis until towards the end. She said her mother was dead now, long gone, but she might have been proud to know that her daughter did not blame anyone for her choices. So this sort of relates to this central conflict in the book and sort of looking at the protagonist reflecting upon the decisions that she's making in her life.
Rosalyn, what would you like to add on this topic?
I liked what Bennett said then about it's not the end of the book, but it's a beginning point to the book, you know. And then to me, any good book is one that brings about discussion and makes you think, you know. And so, you know, as a starting point for the book, you know, Nadia being smart, she's ambitious, she does well in school, and she knows, she makes a very difficult decision, you know, lives with it for the rest of her life. But, you know, she makes that decision because, you know, because she has to, or she feels like she has to, right. Right, a very difficult decision, but yeah, and thereon the book goes, you know, to tell the story of how she lives her life, and you know, she never really, she thinks about the baby all the time. And then, you know, when she keeps the little feet, you know, the symbol in secret,
yeah, she keeps these a little pair of baby feet like a pin,
right.
And she keeps that as a keepsake, and it makes her think about this baby that never became.
Right.
Yes.
Yes, is that?
And that,
yeah, go on.
Well, yes, I was going to say she's also, there is the term in the book that one cannot ever be, like there's the unpregnant woman versus, you know, that, you know, that, and then that baby is sort of capitalized. So baby takes on more, you know, human significance in her life, and she gives the baby a gender, and so that sort of thing as well.
Yeah, and we only have about a minute before the break, so I don't want to drive too deeply into this right now, but another very interesting thing that comes about after the abortion. So Nadia becomes pregnant through her relationship with Luke Shepherd, who is the son of the church, the son of the pastor, the son of the first mother. And when she says that she wants to get an abortion, he gets the money for the abortion. And they never really talk about his feelings, but he also doesn't really process his feelings and ultimately comes to the point where he regrets that she had an abortion. But I found that to be a really interesting part of the book as well. So I want to talk about his feelings in just a moment. We are going to take a short break. We're talking about the book The Mothers by Britt Bennett. It's our September Talk of Iowa Book Club choice. And if you've read it, we'd love to hear from you. Join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa School of Social Work, offering the opportunity to earn a master's degree from anywhere in Iowa, including an all-online MSW program. Information at socialwork.uiowa.edu.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is the September meeting of the Talk of Iowa Book Club. Please join us in October. Our next book selection is House on Mango Street by Sandra Cisneros. And Sandra Cisneros has agreed to join us for that program. So please get yourself a copy and get reading. Right now, we're talking about our September book. It's The Mothers by Britt Bennett. It tells the story of Nadia Turner at the beginning of the book. She's 17 years old. She is an honors student with big dreams. She becomes pregnant. She has an abortion. And then she goes on to live her life. She goes off to college in Ann Arbor. And the book follows her and the other characters of the book for about almost 10 years, probably total, at least until they're in their mid-20s. And before the break, we were talking about the role that abortion plays in this book. And we have some wonderful expert readers with us this hour. Shanna Benjamin is here. She is an independent scholar in literary studies with a specialization in Black women writers. She's the author of the forthcoming book, Half in Shadow, The Life and Legacy of Nellie Y. McKay. Also, Emily Spencer is here studying at the Iowa Writers Workshop and working on a collection of poetry. And Roslyn Thompson is director of the Knoxville Public Library. And let's talk a little bit about Luke Shepherd and his feelings about abortion. Even the talk that Britt Bennett gave for All Iowa Reads, she said she wanted to explore the idea that the father of this baby regretted the abortion. And as a reader, I was kind of frustrated with him as a character because he came to that regret significantly later on in the book. It wasn't necessarily his immediate feeling. He was almost numb at first. Shanna, what was your feeling about that?
You know, I think that he was bound by a script that he had no hand in writing. So when he gets the news, my sense of that moment was that he was trying to be there for Nadia, to support her in whatever decision she wanted to make. I don't know if he felt free, empowered, capable of asserting what he may have known all along. I had a sense that there was some ambivalence in that moment where he just said, oh, okay, yeah, this is what we're going to do. This is whatever you want, whatever I can do. And this was his idea of being a good guy. And I just thought, I wasn't too surprised as the novel went on and he was more articulate, at least in his own mind, about the second thoughts and the misgivings he had about the abortion.
Well, and you mention Articulate in His Own Mind, because this is a book not just about secrets, but it's also about silence. The characters have a really hard time expressing their emotions with each other. Nadia does, Luke does, Aubrey does. There are things that she can't say to anybody. Nadia's father is bound by this silence that he really has a hard time breaking. There's so much of that. Rosalind, I know you have some strong feelings about Luke. What would you like to say?
Right. You know, we were talking about flawed characters. Oh, boy, that Luke character. You know, when we went around the group asking about that character, Luke, and none of us felt any sympathy for him at all. He is not a character you would feel any sympathy for. Pretty weak, because he, you know, yes, he finds out about the pregnancy and tells his parents about it. And by the way, you know, none of us had ever heard that phrase, First Lady of the Church. We had never heard that before for his mother. And then, you know, ultimately when Nadia comes back from college and you know, how he picks up with her, he never seems to have, he's never able to let go of his image of what it is to be a man, you know, and to him, it means being a football star, you know, and that's more to life than that. And his injury, then it pretty much incapacitates him in life. Right.
So I'm going to disagree and say I did feel sympathy for Luke, I also thought a lot about the pressures that he was under and sort of these unrealistic ideas of masculinity that he was wrestling with as well, and the role that he felt he had to play. Emily, do you have thoughts on this?
I think that Luke represented the archetype of the young father in difficult situations related to the family. And yet in this story, the mothers, Luke has agency. I think he does succumb to pressures, and including those of fitting into the post high school or college stereotype or mold that a young male athlete would need to fit into.
Do you, Shanna, I'll let you respond to this first, but anybody else just jump in too. We look at Nadia's father, who was a Marine and became a father very young. Her mother was 17 years old when she became a mother. And he loves Nadia so much, but again, there's this silence and there are these roles that he feels that he must play, although he's also forced into the role of both father and mother for her. I feel like Luke is an earlier version of him in some ways. What do you think, Shanna?
You know, I can't get past the sense that, or the fact that Luke is a preacher's kid. So all of this, I mean, his role as a PK, as a preacher's kid, the fact that in telling his parents about Nadia's pregnancy, how they respond, how his mother in particular responds, as a first lady who I think is very invested in image. And I imagine that his pressures are compounded by the fact that he is always already on display in his capacity as a preacher's kid. And the sort of things that his parents would pour into him, the expectations that they would have of him, I guess it doesn't surprise me that as a young man, he would be so committed to a life that is linked to the dream of playing football. But with everything that goes on with him physically, he is forced to reckon with the fragility of his body. And so that forces him into a completely different space. So when I think about Luke, I also think about him within the context of a very particular kind of family unit, one that is kind of surveilled by other members of the church. And so in anticipation of whatever they may have to say about his choices, there's going to be a whole lot of secrecy going on when it comes to mistakes and shortcomings.
Well, and you bring up his mother, and Rosalind, the character that mm-hmm. I had the least sympathy for was Luke's yeah. mother in all of this.
Absolutely, yes. His mother, and that doing one thing and saying another thing, you know, and keeping that secret. But then I'm also thinking, think of Nadia's father and compare him to Luke, right? And to me, Nadia's father is a strong character. Yes, he's just, you know, silent. He has difficulty talking to Nadia or expressing his love for her. But he's a disciplined person. He's a man of discipline and character. And to me, one of the most compelling parts in the book is when he confronts the pastor and his wife about what they did. And it's just like, yay, go Nadia's father, you know, because because he's got strength of character, which to me, Luke does not.
Interesting. Emily, you want to add anything to this?
Well, I would just say that if we think about the role as well of Luke's mother as First Lady, mm-hmm. and just what First Lady sort of implies, you know, that she has this mm-hmm. precedent that those may look up to her. And so, yes, when there is incongruity between what is said and what is done, this is actually part of the conflict that then leads to, you know, the dissolution of the institution that is so important in this community.
Before we run out of time, I want to talk about the mothers of the church a little bit more. And Shanna, you have used the term Greek chorus to describe the mothers of the church. I mean, they are not just characters and narrators, but they're a literary device through the ages.
Yes. And, you know, traditionally this Greek chorus is, they're homogeneous, right? So they wear these masks and everybody looks the same and the movements are all together. And I think that the opening we and the sort of commentary that the mothers of the church provide from the very outset of the novel, you know, they give us the background, they give us the context. But I also think that we as readers, it's important that we are in a position to critique this voice and to determine, you know, how reliable they are in their assessment of what's going on, what sort of motivations may be lurking behind their portrayal of events. And so I was really taken by how Bennett began with a very collective we, and then as the novel progressed, and, you know, when Nadia was more actively involved in the community, that we begin to see them as individuals. So it wasn't just the carrying on of the, you know, Greek chorus all the way through, but it was manipulated in a way to give specificity to the collective voice that that Bennett had through the mothers of the church in the novel.
Well, and we know that I mentioned earlier that it took her about 8 years to write this novel. From the panel that she did with All Iowa Reads, she said that the idea of this Greek chorus of the mothers actually came in about a year before she finally finished the novel. So I can only imagine what that that was really surprising to me too.
Right. And then, you know, I'm sorry, Charity, is how they, you know, the mothers of the church, how they represent, you know, the universal theme of, you know, intergenerational mm-hmm. conflict, right? These elderly mothers passing judgment on what's happening, even, you know, whether it's true or not. But that is one of my favorite parts of the book. Is when Nadia comes back from college and she takes an active part in the community and actually, you know, drives them around in that great big truck of her dad's, you know. But I like that part.
Well, and it was interesting, too, that the mothers, that collective we, they were in their judgment ultimately self-destructive, too. Emily, anything you want to add?
Right.
Well, but the mothers, they are also representative of the fates. The fates were in charge of looking at, you know, with the thread, unraveling of the thread and looking at destiny. And so seeing the mothers as being able to have this larger commentary on, you know, the meaning of life and sort of mothering that.
So we only have about 2 minutes left, and I would love for each of you to give me just a brief 30-second thought about what has stuck with you after you finished reading the book. What is the thought that keeps coming into your brain, or that character that pops into your thoughts every once in a while? Emily?
Yeah, I just was really delighted to read it, and I thought that for me, what resonated the most was, you know, the use of so many symbols and also the collective voice.
How about you, Rosalyn?
You know, we got a set of discussion questions from the website, the State Library website, the Iowa Center for the Book, and that was really helpful. And one of the questions said, this story is not set in Iowa. You know, most of the selections are set in Iowa or the Midwest, but it is, it's set in a small town. And someone made the comment, yeah, you know, nothing, everyone knows everyone's secret in a small town, right? That there are very few secrets you can keep in a small town.
Yeah. Yeah, that church community really created a close network where it was hard to hide and easy to be seen. Shanna, how about you? What stays with you?
I think what stays with me is just how real Bennett kept it. I mean, she was true to the complexities of life, that you make choices and there are times when you look back on those choices and you don't feel the same way as you did when you made them, but ultimately life goes on, and that there is we can be in a constant state of evolution if we so choose.
Well, and for me, I kept thinking, I can't wait to have other people who've read this book to talk to you about it, because there's just so much there. So thank you all so much for being a part of this conversation.
Thank you,
Charity.
Shanna Benjamin is an independent scholar in literary studies with a specialization in Black women writers, author of the forthcoming book, Half in Shadow, The Life and Legacy of Nellie Y. McKay. Rosalyn Thompson is the director of the Knoxville Public Library. Emily Spencer studies with the Iowa Writers Workshop, and she's working on a collection of poetry. And join us next month, October 14th, for A House on Mango Street with Sandra Cisneros, the author of that book. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.